Welcome to NBA Talk with Isaac Wolf. I am your host, Isaac Wolf. The first round is over. The second round has begun, and we're going to talk about all of it, starting with recap of how the first round ended for each series. Bucks Bulls in game four, it was more Bucks domination on the road. Poor shooting by Chicago, 39% from the field, 25% from three. Great play on both ends by Milwaukee. It was 119-95, the final score. Giannis, 32 points, 17 rebounds, and 7 assists. Grayson Allen, 27 points. Drew Holiday, 26. And, you know, I feel bad for Bulls fans because they had been waiting so long. They finally got a playoff series with, you know, how bad the franchise has been recently. But they finally got their playoff series, and both home games, the only home games, are blowout losses. So that's unfortunate for them. In Game 5, the Bulls were without Zach LaVine and Alex Caruso due to COVID protocols. And the Bucks handled business and advanced to the second round, winning 116-100. Giannis put up 33-9. Bobby Portis, starting in place of Chris Middleton, who sprained his MCL and is out for the entire second round series against the Celtics. Bobby Portis put up 14 points and 17 rebounds in his place. So Bucks won in five, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was my prediction. Warriors Nuggets in game four. Jokic put up 18 points in the first quarter. Bones Highland then hit three threes in a row in the second, and that just sent the arena into a frenzy. I mean, the Nuggets rode that momentum into halftime. The Warriors slowly chipped away in the fourth, took a two-point lead with a minute left, but the Nuggets made the plays necessary to get the W. Jokic hit a layup. Monte Morris made a tough floater in the lane, and then the final, you know, dagger, you could say. Jokic driving down the lane, kicked it out to Will Barton when the help came for corner three. 126-121, Nuggets get their first win of the series. In game five, Steph Curry's layup to stretch the lead from 3-5 with 30 seconds left helped lift the Warriors to a 102-98 win to end the series against Denver. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe I also had Warriors in five in that series. Heat Hawks, game four, the Heat, I mean, they just dismantled the Hawks without Kyle Lowry. I mean, I don't know how they did it without Lowry, but 110-86 was the final score. Jimmy Butler, 36 points, 10 rebounds. Game five, the Heat again, or this time they were without Jimmy Butler. But Trae Young struggled so bad that the Heat still won. Trae Young, 11 points, 2 for 12 from the field, 0 for 5 from 3. He went from averaging 28 points per game in the regular season to 15 in the postseason. And that was the biggest decline in NBA history. Decrease, however you want to say it. So Heat win in five, another series I predicted right. Suns Pelicans in game four, Brandon Ingram put up 30. Jonas Valanciunas put up 26 and 15. McCollum put up 18, and the Pelicans tied the series up 118-103. Again, the Suns without Devin Booker at this point. In game five, though, Mikal Bridges stepped up. 31 points. He's not much of an offensive threat. Usually he's a good shooter and has length to finish, but 31 points, that's not what he normally does. But he did it that night, and it put the Suns up 3-2 in the series, 112-97. Chris Paul, 22.6 rebounds and 11 assists in that game. And then in game six, Chris Paul played literally a perfect game. Because he had zero, he didn't have zero turnovers. He had three turnovers, but he had 33 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists. He shot 14 of 14 from the field. He did not miss one single shot. Not from mid-range, not from inside, not from the three-point line, and not from the free-throw line either. He went 4-for-4 for the free-throw line. That's really all you need to know about this game. Devin Booker came back, put up 13 in 32 minutes, though. Chris Paul is that dude. He played so unbelievably well in this series, and it gives me even more confidence in the Phoenix Suns. As for the Pelicans, by the way, this was one of the series I did not predict right. I said Suns in five. It was Suns in six. As for the Pelicans, the future is bright. These guys fought and proved themselves against the best team in the league without their best player. They are going to be a solid playoff team next year. Starting lineup looks like this. If everyone's healthy, Devontae Graham, CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, Zion, and Jonas Valanciunas. That is a really good starting five. And the rookies? Jose Alvarado? I mean, he became the social media star of the Pelicans during this series. He made life difficult for Paul, sneaking up on him, picking him up full court. Herbert Jones, the best defender in this year's rookie class, has an argument for an all-defensive team. You know, the length, athleticism, the anticipation, his hands, the timing he has. He's an elite defender at the NBA level at such a young age. And that is certainly a bright spot for New Orleans. Trey Murphy shot 47% from three in this series. When Ingram went down with a hamstring injury late in the regular season, Murphy was about to go to the G League after falling out of the rotation, but he stepped in and made an impact over the last 17 games of the season, averaging almost 10 points per game on 43% shooting from downtown. And if you remember in the play-in game against the Clippers, he had three huge fourth quarter threes that helped the Pelicans come back and win that game in LA to get the eighth seed. A really, you know, unlikely trio was so important for this team. Again, their story is just so amazing, this team. They started the season 3-16, 1-12, I think, with a rookie head coach, Willie Green, which he deserves a lot of credit for what he did with this team. And no Zion. They won back-to-back games to get into the playoffs and then gave the Suns trouble as the eighth seed. The Pelicans have all the makings of a playoff contender for the next five-ish years if they can keep everyone there. Jazz Mavs in game five. Jazz, lowest scoring first half of the season, 36 points. They only scored four in the last 7 minutes. They finished with 77. They only scored 41 in the second half as Dallas blew them out by 25. Luka put up 33 and 13. Jalen Brunson added 24. Mavs take a 3-2 series lead. Game six, this was a great game. It was tight the whole way. Teams traded three-pointers late. Dorian Finney-Smith got one. Doncic hit a three. Then Bogdanovich hit one, followed by a corner three from Jalen Brunson. 97-94 was the score with a minute left. Gobert hits a layup that cuts the Dallas lead to one. Then after Luka missed a tough fader over Gobert on the other end, Mike Conley got the ball on the fast break and he traveled. He traveled with 5 seconds left. A very awkward play, very uncharacteristic of the veteran. He kind of just, you know, looked like he got ahead of himself and didn't know what to do when he was trying to stop. But Jalen Brunson only made one free throw, so the Jazz advanced the ball. Get the perfect look on a great play. Bojan Bogdanovic pump fakes. The defender goes flying. He has a wide open three and he misses at the buzzer. That would have won the game. Mavs hold on to win 98-96. This is the Dallas Mavericks' first playoff series win since the 2011 finals. With Dirk Nowitzki, Jason Kidd, that team that beat the Heat, we know that. And Luka was the difference. No, actually, I would argue Jalen Brunson was the difference because he set the tone in games 1 and 2 that said the Mavericks were going to compete with this Jazz team without their franchise cornerstone. And he put up, 41 in game 2? And then I want to say he hit 30 the next night. And then once Doncic came back, I mean, the Mavericks just rode that momentum and took the series in 6 games. I thought it was going to be Jazz in 6. It was Mavs in 6. Luka reached 500 career playoff points in just 16 games. Second only to MJ, Michael Jordan, who did it in 14. Celtics, Nets, game 4. Boston finished the series off. They swept them. They swept the Brooklyn Nets. 116-112 is the final score. We will revisit this subject later. Sixers, Raptors, game 5. Toronto wins on the road, 103-88. So after being down 3-0, they win 2 games in a row to cut the series lead to 3-2. And then in game 6, the Sixers came ready. They blew out Toronto 132-97. However, Joel Embiid suffered a concussion and an orbital fracture, which means a fracture of his face. And he is out for at the minimum games 1 and 2 of this series. The second round series, that is. More on what this means for the Sixers in a minute. But we're going to talk about Grizzlies Timberwolves right now because game 5 of that series might have been the most exciting game of the entire playoffs, besides perhaps game 1 of Nets Celtics. The Timberwolves entered the fourth quarter up 11, 85-74. And they had lost momentum, though, at that point. You want to know why? Because Ja Morant had the dunk of the century. I guarantee you've seen it by now. My goodness, I believe that was on Malik Beasley that Ja dunked on. I literally screamed out loud and jumped out of my seat on the couch while I was watching that live. It was unbelievable. I thought it was just going to be one of those, you know, attempts from Ja that misses, those spectacular attempts from Ja that misses, but it was not. He made it, and it was utterly shocking and awesome to watch, quite honestly. My opinion, that's the best dunk I have seen maybe in my entire life. But anyway, the Grizzlies slowly chipped away in the fourth. It took some time. It took some back and forth. But eventually they went on a 10-0 run to cut the lead to one. Ja Morant put the team on his back. He kept drawing fouls and knocking down free throws in the fourth. He hit a clutch three to give the Grizzlies the lead with a minute left. Then he hit two more free throws after that to stretch the lead to three. But with 3 seconds left, Anthony Edwards steps up and hits a wild three from the corner to tie the game. So it was Ja's turn to respond. And he did, with a tough, tough left-handed finish at the rim. With 1 second left, Grizzlies win 111-109. Ja put up 30 points, 13 rebounds, and 9 assists. He had 18 points in the fourth quarter alone. Game 6, the Timberwolves had another double-digit lead going into the fourth quarter, and they blew it again for the third time this series. Memphis outscored Minnesota 40-22 in the fourth quarter. Final score 114-106. The Grizzlies take the series in 6. They will play the Warriors in the second round. So, speaking of the second round, we're going to preview it. We got 4 series, 2 in each conference now, down to the Elite Eight, if you want to call it that, of the NBA. I don't want to call it that, but in the West, we have the Suns and the Mavericks. And the Mavericks, you know, they proved me wrong in the first round, and they're going to have to prove me wrong again because I'm taking the Suns in 6. I mean, the Suns have looked like the best team all season long, and Chris Paul is playing out of his mind right now. So, if Devin Booker, I feel like Devin Booker rushed his return. I thought there was no way he was returning in that first round series. I get the panic when the Pelicans tie the series up. They want to rush him back, but not with a hamstring injury. That is not the thing you want to rush back. I don't know what to expect from him in this series. I don't know what we're going to get from him. We did not see the best version of him in his return, 13 points in 32 minutes. But I've still got the Suns because Chris Paul has been on another level in these playoffs. Suns in 6. Grizzlies, Warriors. This is where, yes, I love the Grizzlies. I really do. But they are so young. They ran into another young team. And that's honestly why they won that first round series. And the Timberwolves, they were a great match for them. Just, you know, with their speed, their athleticism. But I'm taking the Warriors in 5. Could it be 6? Yes. Do I see it going 7? No. Because the Golden State Warriors have veterans who are still superstars. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. And then they've got Andrew Wiggins. Jordan Poole has been going crazy. He did in that first round series against the Nuggets. And I just think the Warriors' experience is going... I think this is where the road ends for Memphis. And I think it's going to be a rude awakening for them. I'm going to say Warriors in 5. In the East, Heat Sixers. I've got the Sixers in 7, but listen to this. Without Embiid... They're going to be without Embiid for games 1 and 2. We know that. He's got the concussion and facial fracture, orbital fracture. We may see him with a mask when he comes back. He hopes to return at home in game 3. That's his target date right now. I think the Heat will go up 2-0 in this series to start. I haven't seen enough from Philly's supporting cast that makes me think they can steal a game on the road against this team, especially since Embiid is out. If Embiid is back for game 3... I think the Philly atmosphere is going to be electric. Embiid's going to bring the energy. The fans will bring the energy. Guys like Maxey, Harris, Harden, and Thibault will, you know, feed off of that, benefit from that. And I think Philly evens the series up if Embiid is back in time. If not, if Joel Embiid does not return by game 3, this series could wrap up very quickly. I'm talking 4 or 5 games. James Harden has not shown me enough to believe in this Sixers team without Embiid. This leads me to my next point. What James Harden are we going to see in this series? Philly needs Houston Harden. He can grab a game or two on the road without Embiid. Houston Harden certainly can. But Harden's highest scoring playoff game in that first round was 22 points. He hit 22 points 3 different times. Never scored more than that. I don't know if it's the fit with Embiid taking so much of the offense away from Harden or if Harden is really past his prime. I think we're about to find out. Harden, in my opinion, when he's got his own team, plays his best. When he doesn't have a superstar to share the load with, I think that's when he's at his best, like he was in Houston. And this series is the greatest test of that. The Heat are excellent defensively. They are going to focus on him. Jimmy Butler is probably going to guard him most of the series. How is he going to handle that? The Sixers need Harden to become his old self in games 1 and 2. Just 2 games. They just need 2, you know, superhuman performances from James Harden to get those wins on the road. This series may be the most important in James Harden's career, with the exception of the 2018 Western Conference Finals. He needs to prove himself one way or another. Can he still carry a team, or is he past his prime? It's gut check time for James Harden. And also, don't be surprised if Paul Reed, the backup center for the Sixers, makes an impact in place of Embiid. He's a Robert Williams type of player. 6'9", 6'10", slim but very athletic, bouncy, can get to almost any shot in terms of blocking him. And offensively, he's a great pick and roll, Clint Capella-like target for James Harden. I like him stepping into this role for Philly, and I think he's ready for it. I think he's going to surprise some people with his impact, you know, at the rim on both ends. And then the final series in the Eastern Conference that has actually started as of 2.5 hours ago. This game is got 2.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. We got Milwaukee up 12 on the road in Boston. And I'm saying Bucks in 6. This is what I was thinking before I'd watched this game. Even without Chris Middleton, the way the Bucks destroy, the Bulls are a talented team, but the way they just dismantled the Bulls 2 games in a row on the road was so impressive. And they did that without Middleton. They did that without Chris Middleton. And I was like, okay, this team still got it. They're ready to go. They're ready to run it back to back. So I'm taking the Bucks in 6. Because if you watch this game, if you've watched this game so far, I mean, the Celtics can't get anything on the inside. With Giannis and Brook Lopez defensively protecting the rim, the Celtics in the paint just aren't as effective as they were against the undersized Nets. And that's really where, you know, they took advantage of Brooklyn in that first round, was in the paint, because Brooklyn didn't have anybody that could stop them down low. But the Bucks do, and I think they're going to win this series in 6 games. Speaking of the Brooklyn Nets, let's talk about them for a little bit. They got swept by the Boston Celtics in the first round. This looks bad. This looks really bad. But at the end of the day, it was how good the Celtics were defensively that won this series. Jason Tatum guarded Kevin Durant for the majority of this series. And when Tatum was KD's primary defender, these are what Durant's stats looked like. 15 points total. 4 of 17 shooting. 1 of 6 from 3. 9 turnovers. That is incredible. For how long Tatum guarded Durant, for Durant to only take 17 shots is insane. We must start respecting Jason Tatum as a defender and a two-way superstar in this league. You know, I kind of never really saw his defensive ability. I knew it was there. People were talking about it. But until this series, I had just thought of him as an offensive threat and a, you know, shot creator. No one has ever played Kevin Durant like Tatum and the Celtics did in that series. And it was very, very impressive. As for the Nets side of it, the superstars have to be better. KD had to adjust, and he kind of did in game 4. He got going in the first half, but he didn't adjust soon enough. Like, after game 1, you could tell this series was going to be physical. How was Durant going to adjust? He didn't. And then Kyrie, you know, had multiple games of, 16 points and then 10 points. I mean, he just wasn't himself. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the Ramadan fasting or whatever, but he did not look like the Kyrie that we saw in the regular season. So the superstars have to be better, and the Nets need more size. They really do. The lineups with, you know, Kyrie, Seth Curry, Goran Dragic, Bruce Brown, and Kevin Durant, that Steve Nash put in to try and get some offense, you know, they simply couldn't compete with the Celtics' size. The Nets need bigger wings and better bigs if they want to build a true championship contender. My goodness, Nicholas Claxton was like the greatest dilemma for the Nets because he was dominating in game four from the field. Like he didn't miss a shot from the field. He was finishing at the rim very, very well. But at the free throw line, he started out the game 0 for 10. He broke Shaq's record from the free throw line. That is not a good Shaq record to break. So Nick Claxton, his inability to make free throws certainly hurt them in game four. But, I mean, it's not just him. Blake Griffin, I wish Brooklyn would have played Blake Griffin throughout this entire series, because when he was in, he made an impact. He was a great defender on Jason Tatum. He got stops. He made plays. He brought energy. I think that was a big mistake by Steve Nash, was not putting Blake Griffin in the rotation for this series. But anyway, if they want to build a true championship contender, the Nets need bigger wings and better bigs. Yes, they were missing Joe Harris, who's a sizable sharpshooting wing, but they need more. And I understand small ball is more prevalent than ever in this game, this year's, you know, this league currently. But in the playoffs, size is still so important. We see that with the Bucks. We see that with the Suns and DeAndre Ayton. The Nets don't have that right now. And that showed. That was exposed. The Nets' problems, you know, where they fell short, was exposed completely in this series against the Celtics. And credit to Boston for basically manhandling them. To wrap up today, this day in NBA history, in 1988, Michael Jordan became the first player to score 50 or more points in consecutive playoff games, when he went for 55 against Cleveland in game two of the first round series after scoring 50 even in game one. We will be back soon with second round recap. We got a lot of great series. I'm excited for it, and we'll see you then.